that can target only the genes that are important for improving crop fitness or for conferring a desirable trait.
Welcome to Nano Matters, the podcast that explores examples of nanotechnology. I'm Lisa Friedersdorf, Director of the National Nanotechnology Coordination Office. Here with me today is Marquita Landry, Assistant Professor of Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering at the University of California, Berkeley. Her lab uses nanotechnology to help address low crop yields in agriculture. So, Marquita, can you explain how nanotechnology can be applied to agriculture and help crop yields?
Yeah, so nanotechnology is currently being used or currently being developed to be used with a few different applications in mind, all of which can help increase crop fitness and therefore crop yield. So my lab specifically uses nanotechnology for the delivery of DNA to plants for their genetic engineering. Now, one of the main ways that genetic engineering of consumer crops can help increase yields is by targeted mutagenesis of the plant genome in a way that confers desirable traits to plants. And that can be in the form of increased yields, such as mutations that allow more, for example, grains of rice to be produced per plant. And it can also be in the form of creating plants that are more robust to changing environmental conditions. So for example, plants that are resistant to pest infestations or that are more robust in the face of changing temperatures.
Is this type of application of nanotechnology to deliver a cargo like this helpful for plants outside of agriculture?
Certainly, I think so. The delivery of DNA or other molecular workhorses of biotechnology, such as RNA and proteins, to plants can find, I think, beneficial applications outside of agricultural science for increasing crop fitness and crop yields. And I think one good example is in the engineering of medicinal plants, where over 20% of our pharmaceuticals are derived from natural products that are coming from plant tissues or plant matter. So being able to upregulate the production of these small molecules that are eventually used as drugs can also be beneficial.
What is the status of this technology? Is it still very early stage in the lab, or do you think that it's something that will be commercialized in the near future?
Yeah, so some of the work that we've done in developing nanotechnology for the delivery of DNA is now being tested for the delivery of larger DNA vectors, specifically for a set of proteins or class of proteins, CRISPR, that when associated with a guide RNA, plus a Cas9 protein can associate to form a CRISPR complex that will site-specifically modify the genome. So I think that is one of the major potential applications of our technology is for CRISPR-based genome editing in plants, specifically because when we deliver DNA vectors with nanomaterials, we don't observe integration of the transgene into the plant host genome. And this is potentially important for regulatory reasons, in the sense that the integration of foreign DNA into plant genomes is one of the triggers for labeling of those plant products as genetically modified organisms or GMOs.
So the modification that you're doing to enable the plant to be more resistant to external stresses or to withstand some form of attack makes the plant more hardy, for lack of a better term, but it doesn't impact the fruit or the part of the plant that someone would eat.
Yeah, exactly. So part of the benefit of transient expression of a DNA vector that's delivered is that it can target only the genes that are important for improving crop fitness or for conferring a desirable trait, whether that be drought tolerance or otherwise, without altering other genes in the plant, which is always a potential drawback of delivering DNA that integrates into the host genome.
So by what you just described, you're able to impart traits that could help us be able to better feed the population increases that are being predicted.
Yeah, certainly. I think one of the challenges, and it's not a new challenge, it's something that our globe has faced multiple times, seeing an increase in the population in a way that is outpacing our ability to generate food. This first happened in the 1800s when fertilizer, which was only available naturally at the time, became one of the hottest commodities. And until the development of nitrogen fixation through the Haber-Bosch process, the globe was headed towards a pretty significant shortfall of food availability. Yes, currently, in the coming decades, the global population is projected to increase by 60 to 70%. And so to be able to keep pace with feeding that population and also being able to distribute our food to the entirety of that population is a major challenge that is being currently addressed by many different aspects of agricultural science. Genetic engineering of plants is one of several possible solutions or contributions to the solution to that problem, specifically with the ability to generate plant varietals that are genetically edited that can produce more food per unit of arable land mass. And I think that's one of the main goals of agricultural engineering, in addition to also juggling the challenge of having to adapt these crops for different climates. So crops that were able to grow really well at certain latitudes 10 years ago might be under very different climate conditions today. So being able to quickly adapt those crops for growth in those regions in a way that outpaces evolution or natural selection, which is the alternative, I think is also very important.
So Marquita, what inspired you to work in this area?
It was a funny path into this area because when I started my lab, my own expertise is in microscopy and imaging. And so when I opened my lab 4 years ago, the goal of the lab was to develop nanosensors for imaging applications. And certainly this is a direction that we've headed in. But initially, the project that I described today was meant to be a project for imaging nitric oxide in plant tissues. The drawback that we saw with that project is that our nanosensors that we were developing would routinely internalize into plant cells, which was a bit of a surprise to us, and unfortunately, not the best feature for the original imaging studies that we'd planned. But we quickly learned that these materials had interesting properties about them that allow them to be internalized into plant cells. And so from there on, we pivoted and we thought a little bit about how we could use these same materials, not for imaging, but for the delivery of molecules that would be important for genetic engineering and genome editing in plants.
So thank you again for taking the time to talk with us today. Do you have any closing thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I think this is certainly a new research space for our lab. And as new tools are developed and are being applied in different sectors of agricultural biotechnology, I think it's important to communicate the benefits of these tools with the public in a way that's transparent and straightforward. Because while there might be public, perhaps aversions to genetically modified organisms, specifically ones that are potentially being used to feed people across the world, we are also faced with some very big challenges.